Okay, so what I'm going to do is have a little bit of a talk about what's happened today, what's going to happen tomorrow, and also to have a little bit of a meditation as well. Because... You okay there?
Feedback.
Is that better?
You're right.
Okay, so let's get out of business. Because today we've just been to a number of places, tomorrow we're going to Rajagaha. But again, as I mentioned on the thing on the first evening, I don't want this just to be a tour around stones. I want to make it a meditation tour, a proper Buddhist tour. And so I'm going to do some meditation later on. But before we start, I'm going to be reading out something about where we went to today, especially to the Park Bodhi, because that was the place where the Buddha, or rather the Buddha-to-be, was practicing before he went off to Bodh Gaya. So I'm going to read out a section from the suttas. The sutta which I'm going to read out from today is the Mahasachika Sutta, and this is actually some of the story of the Buddha's enlightenment. So I'm just going to be reading out straight from the suttas here. And the reason I'm reading it out, because I bought this book all the way from Perth. So I'm determined to read some of it out. So here we go. And this is, he was talking to Agi Wasena, just about his life as a boy became enlightened. So who's that? So I thought, suppose with my teeth clenched and my tongue pressed against the roof of my mouth, I beat down, constrain and crush mind with mind. In other words, using willpower. So with my teeth clenched and my tongue pressed against the roof of my mouth, I beat down, constrain and crush mind with mind. While I did so, sweat ran from my armpits, just as a strong man might seize a weaker man by the head or shoulder and beat him down. Constrain him and crush him, so too with my teeth clenched and my tongue pressed against the roof of my mouth. I beat down, constrained, and crushed mind with mind, and sweat ran from my armpits. But although tireless energy was aroused in me, an unremitting mindfulness was established, my body was overwrought and uncalm because I was exhausted by the painful striving. But such painful feelings arose in me did not invade my mind and remain. I thought, suppose I practice the breathingless meditation, so I stopped the in-breath and out-breath through my mouth and nose. While I did so, there was a loud sound of winds coming out from my ear holes, just as there is a loud sound when the mist bellows are blown. So too, while I stopped the in-breath and out-breath through my nose and ears, there was a loud sound of winds coming out from my ear holes. But although tireless energy was aroused in me and unremitting mindfulness was established, my body was overwrought and uncalm because I was exhausted by the painful striving. I thought, suppose I practice further the breathingless meditation. So I stopped the in-breath and out-breath through my mouth, nose and ears. While I did so, violent winds cut through my head, just as if a strong man was splitting my head open with a sharp sword. So too, while I stopped the in-breath and out-breath through my mouth, nose and ears, violent winds cut through my head. But a low tireless energy was aroused in me. An unremitting mindfulness was established. My body was overwrought and uncalm because I was exhausted by the painful striving. I thought, suppose I practice further the breathingless meditation. So I stopped the in-breath and out-breath through my mouth, nose and ears. While I did so, there were violent pains in my head, just as if a strong man were tightening a tough leather strap around my head as a headband. So too, while I stopped the in-breath and out-breath through my mouth, nose and ears, there were violent pains in my head. But although tireless energy was aroused in me, an unremitting mindfulness was established, my body was overwrought and uncalm, because I was exhausted by the painful striving. I thought, suppose I practice further the breathingless meditation. So I stopped the in-breath and out-breath through my mouth, nose and ears. While I did so, violent winds carved. Violent winds carved up my belly, just as if a skilled butcher or his apprentice were to carve up an ox's belly with a sharp butcher's knife. So too will I stop the in-breath and out-breath through my mouth, nose and ears. Violent winds carved up my belly. But although tireless energy was aroused in me, an unremitting mindfulness was established. My body was overwrought and uncalm, because I was exhausted by the painful striving. I thought, suppose I practice further the breathingless meditation. So I stopped the in-breaths and the out-breaths through my mouth, nose and ears. And while I did so, there was a violent burning in my body, just as if two strong men were to seize a weaker man by both arms and roast him over a pit of hot coals. So too, while I stopped the in and out breaths through my mouth, nose and ears, there was a violent burning in my body. But although tireless energy was aroused in me, and unremitting mindfulness was established, my body was overwrought and uncalm, because I was exhausted by the painful striving. Now, when some devas saw me, some said, the recluse Gotama is dead. Other deities said, the recluse Gotama is not dead, he's just dying. Another deity said, the recluse Gotama is not dead nor dying, he's an arahat, for such is the way arahats abide. I thought, suppose I practice entirely cutting off food. Then deities came to me and said, good sir, do not practice entirely cutting off food. If you do so, we shall infuse heavenly food into the pores of your skin, and you will live on that. I considered, if I claim to be completely fasting, while these devas infuse heavenly food into the pores of my skin and I live on that, then I shall be lying. So I dismissed those deities, saying, there is no need. I thought, suppose I take very little food, a handful each time, whether it be bean soup or lentil soup or vetch soup or pea soup. So I took very little, a handful each time, whatever it was. When I did so, my body reached a state of extreme emaciation. Because of eating so little, my limbs became like the jointed segments of vine stems or bamboo stems. Because of eating so little, my backside became like a camel's hoof. Because of eating so little, the projections on my spine stood forth like corded beads. Because of eating so little, my ribs jutted out as gaunt as the crazy rafters on an old roofless barn. Because of eating so little, the gleam of my eyes sank far down into the sockets, looking like the gleam of water that has sunk far down in a deep well. Because of eating so little, my scalp shriveled and withered, as a green gourd shrivels and withers in the wind and sun. Because of eating so little, my belly skin adhered to my backbone. Thus, if I touched my belly skin, I encountered my backbone. If I touched my backbone, I encountered my belly skin. Because of eating so little, if I urinated or defecated, I fell over on my face right there, because of eating so little. If I tried to eat my body by rubbing my limbs and my hands, the hair rotted at its roots, fell from my body as I rubbed it. Now when people saw me, some said, the recluse Gotama is black. Other people said, he's not black, he is brown. Other people said, he's neither black nor brown. He is golden skinned, so much had the clear bright colour of my skin deteriorated through eating so little. And I thought, whatever recluse or Brahmins in the past have experienced painful, racking, piercing feelings due to exertion, this is the utmost, there is none beyond this. Now, whatever recluses and Brahmins in the future will experience painful, racking, piercing feelings due to exertion, this is the utmost. There is none beyond this. And whatever recluses and Brahmins in the Brahmins at the present experience painful, racking, piercing feelings due to exertion, this is the utmost. There is none beyond this. But by this racking practice of austerities, I have not attained any superhuman states, any distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of the noble ones. Could there be another path to enlightenment? Now, because of I told you some of that story today, when we went to the Prabodhi cave, there you saw the statue of the Buddha with his rather the Bodhisattva, Siddhartha Gautama. Here's the recluse Gautama before his enlightenment with his ribs all sticking out. this is actually describing this particular event when he was practicing, trying to stop his breathing, eating so little that when he shouldn't have actually been a gold colour, a black colour would be closer to the description over here. And also to tell whenever he was even trying to defecate or urinate, he'd just fall over in what he'd just done because he was so unsteady on his feet. Now that was when he tried to crush his mind with his mind. And even though, as it says here, unremitting mindfulness was established in him, and tireless energy was aroused in him, he was exhausted by the painful striving. His body was overwrought and uncalmed. And I'm emphasizing that so we can actually learn from these experiences. When we go to such a place, you see that there the Buddha tried his very hardest. But using willpower or just trying to crush mind with mind doesn't work. And this was actually the sutta which was in referred to in Venerable Dhammika's book, and I'm very glad he referred to this, because just after the phrase which I just completed here, the story of his not eating and restraining his breath, there comes to Siddhartha Gautama, the reckless Gautama, the following thought: could there be another path to enlightenment? I considered, I recall that when my father the Sakyan was occupied, while I was sitting in the cool shade of a rose apple tree, quite secluded from sensual pleasures and secluded from unwholesome states, I entered upon and abided in the first jhana, which is accompanied by applied and sustained movement of mind with rapture and pleasure born of seclusion. Could that be the path to enlightenment, to Bodhi? Then following on that memory came the realization, that is the path to Bodhi, jhanas. I thought, why am I afraid of that pleasure that has nothing to do with sensual pleasures and unwholesome states? It's the pleasures of deep meditations. And I thought, I am not afraid of that pleasure, since it has nothing to do with sensual pleasures and unwholesome states. Now remember, the sensual pleasures and unwholesome states are the two extremes which the Buddha would later describe as the opposites of the middle way. And the pleasures of the jhanas are the middle way. They lie in between those two extremes. Now I consider it is not easy to attain that pleasure with body so excessively emaciated. Suppose I ate some solid food, some boiled rice. And so I ate some solid food. Now at that time the five bhikkhus were waiting upon me, thinking, if our recluse Gautama achieves some high estate, he will inform us. But when I started eating boiled rice, the five monks were disgusted and left me, thinking, the recluse Gautama now lives in luxury. He is giving up his striving and reverted to luxury. Now when I had eaten solid food and regained my strength, and the solid food which he ate was what? Rice. And who gave him that solid food? Sujata, yes, because we also went today to the village where Sujata came from, and there's a big stupa over her house, and this is actually where Sujata comes into the story, the Buddha's enlightenment. So he ate that solid food. It wasn't actually ordinary food, it was food fit for devas. And I think from what I've heard of what was on the menu this evening and today at this hotel, this too is deva food. So you've also eaten food fit for devas. I'm not sure who the cook is, but who knows, it could be a woman named Sujata, or maybe a descendant of hers, because this is in the area. And having eaten solid food and regained my strength, then secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, I entered upon and abided in the first jhana, and then into the second jhana, the third and the fourth jhana. When the concentrated mind was thus purified, bright, unblemished, rid of imperfection, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attained to imperturbability, I directed it to knowledge of the recollection of the past lives. This was the first knowledge attained by me in the first watch of the night, remembering past lives. And then when the concentration was thus purified, with the divine eye, I saw beings passing away and reappearing according to their karma. And the insight into the law of karma was the second true knowledge, attained by me in the second watch of the night. And when my concentrated mind was thus purified, bright, unblemished, I directed it to knowledge of the destruction of the asavas. And know what the asavas are? The actual word means actually an outflowing of the mind, a current which takes the attention out anywhere other than right inside, which actually faces outwards. As I mentioned yesterday about what direction the Buddha should face and what direction you should face, I mentioned as we were going into the Mahabodhi temple, the only way that you should really face is not towards the Buddha, not away from the Buddha. You should always face inwards. And going outwards is actually the current of the asavas, the outflowings of the mind. Going inwards is in the opposite direction, which goes against the outflowings of the mind. These outflowings is what asavas mean, or taints here. I can usually call them outflowings. So in the third watch of the night, I came to understand the knowledge of the destruction of the outflowings. I directly knew as it actually was, this is dukkha, this is the origin of dukkha, this is the cessation of dukkha, this is the way leading to the cessation of dukkha, the Four Noble Truths. Plus, this is the origin of the outflowings, why the mind goes out. This is the cause for the outflowings, which is craving. This is the cessation of the outflowings, and this is the way for the cessation of the outflowings. Again, it's the Eightfold Path. When I knew and saw thus, my mind was liberated from the asavas. When it was the outflowings, when it was liberated, there came the knowledge, it is liberated. I directly knew birth has been destroyed, the holy life has been lived, what had to be done has been done, there is no more coming to any state of being. And this was the third true knowledge attained by me in the third watch of the night. Ignorance was banished, and true knowledge arose. Darkness was banished, and light arose, as happens in one who abides diligent, ardent, and resolute. And that was the story of the Lord Buddha's enlightenment at Bodhgaya. So in this little sutta here, which I read, I tried to bring together the places we've been over the last couple of days. And we went in a backwards order. I suppose first of all we should have gone to Prabodhi first of all, actually to see sort of how the Buddha practiced his ascetic practices. But it's also necessary to let people know that the five ascetics, his friends who later became the first five bhikkhus, when they saw the bhikkhu practicing such asceticism, they had a lot of praise for him. They thought, what a wonderful fellow he was. He was really practicing hard for enlightenment. But it wasn't the path to enlightenment. Crushing mind with mind, even with unremitting mindfulness and energy, is not the way, because, again, your mind, your body was overwrought and uncalm, and it was exhausted by painful striving. Those are important words to understand. But having taken a good meal, and then he said, only by taking such a good meal, he said, it's not easy, going back here, I consider it is not easy to attain the jhanas with a body so excessively emaciated. Basically, because you were tired, your body was overwrought. And he found that those jhanas were the path to enlightenment, which is why he practiced that way. And which is why that I've taught for the last, I don't know how many years, the way to enlightenment also is not try to crush your mind with your mind. It's not trying to have a body which is overwrought and painful and tired. Which is why that it's a wonderful thing to be able to sit meditation in a chair, so your body is not overwrought and tired. You do get enough sleep, so you're not overwrought and tired. And so you do get decent food, so you're not overwrought and tired. And then when you do sit meditation, please Do not try and crush your mind with your might. Otherwise, in the end, you will get what I first heard in Malaysia is called Somali headache, and here it is called, where's it gone? Just as if a, just if there was a little bit about this fighting. Just as if a strong man were tightening a tough leather strap around my head as a headband. So if you get headaches like that, as if there's somebody tightening a headband around your head and pulling it tight, or if you get sharp pains going through your body as if you've been cut up with a butcher's knife. This is what happens if you try and crush your mind with your mind. So when we do our meditation, please learn how to let go, to do things very, very gently, not to be too tight, but to be very, very gentle. As many people have heard me saying over the last couple of months, if you try to hold something very still, it doesn't matter how hard you try, how hard I try to hold this little clock still, it will never be absolutely still. Because when you hold something, when you try and control it, when you try and make it still, the very act of trying, of holding, of controlling, makes it move. The only way you can keep something like this still is the easy way, which is, again, to put it down. Because once you put it down, it's absolutely still, it's not moving at all now. In exactly the same way, the way we meditate is learning how to let go of things, learning how to let go of the mind. And this is something which I've encouraged you, especially when we've been visiting the Mahabodhi Temple, just a little ways away. I mentioned to many of you, you can really feel some of the energies in that place, but to be able to feel those energies, you have to let go and allow those energies to come to you. If you go seeking for things, that's like controlling, that's trying to pick it up, and never get still enough to really appreciate what's really happening there. So in all these places we go, I want you to try and learn how to really let go, just to make the mind very still, not to expect anything, not to want anything, not to try and control things, but to be able to be sensitive enough to open the mind, especially to experiencing the power of these places, to see how strong they are. So to be able to do that, I want people to be able to meditate here, to meditate in the evenings, as often as we can, to be able to prepare the mind in still states, because that will enhance the visits to these places. We've just gone to one of the most powerful places, Bodh Gaya, but tomorrow we're going to one of the most inspiring places, which is the Vulture's Peak in Rajgir. There's other places in Rajgir we're going to go. We're going to go to the Satapani Cave, which has some very great importance for the Sangha, but I'll explain that later. We're going to go to the bamboo grove where the Buddha stayed for many, many years. And one of my favourite suttas was actually taught there, which was the, the Samanyapala Sutta. But the most inspiring place of all for me actually in Rajgir is the Vulture's Peak. So we're going to go up there and do some meditation. And that's very inspiring because it's very simple. It's actually exactly the same as when the Buddha was alive. And so you can actually feel, you get a sense of like how the great monks, especially the Buddha, would have lived at that time in simplicity, in solitude, in peace and calm. And hopefully that you, if you can, develop the good meditations, not trying to crush the mind with the mind, but learning how to let go, to put things down, to open the mind, to free the mind, that you too can be able to experience some of this immense energies in these places. So that's going to happen tomorrow. I think we're actually going up to Vulture's Peak, not actually tomorrow, but the following morning, early on in the morning. So I'll be talking some more about that. But the important thing is we want to really enhance our meditation so that we can experience these beautiful places to the fullest. So that's what's going to happen tomorrow. Most of you know how I teach meditation. Present moment awareness and silence, first of all. Those two states are how you open the mind to peace and quiet. When you're in the present moment, you're right here. When you're expecting something,
So some people were saying they went around the Mahabodhi temple, but they never really felt anything. I said that's probably because you're expecting to feel something, because you wanted it. If you're looking for it, it will never happen. If you stop, just be present, be silent, just don't think, just make the mind as still as possible, be in the present moment, then there's a good chance these things will actually occur. Not when you want it, not when you're expecting it, not when you're looking for it, just when you're still. Because when you're looking for it, you're actually sending the mind out. It's another arsenal, an outflowing of the mind. You're not facing inwards, you're facing outwards. So see if you can actually face inwards, go inwards, against the stream, the current. There's actually another story which is pertinent today, which I should have mentioned when we were going across the Nirmanjula River. Because it was in that river, before the Buddha's enlightenment, he put his bowl in that river, and he said that if I have what it takes to become enlightened, may my bowl flow against the current. Now of course, you can understand, if he put his bowl in that river today, it wouldn't go against the current, it wouldn't go with the current, it would go nowhere, be in the stand. But that was a long time ago. In the time of the Buddha, even during this season, the dry season, there would still be water in that river. Now there's only water in the rainy season. The boys today said, during the rainy season there's lots of water in that river, but not right now. Remember, it was Waisak when the Buddha did this, or just prior to Waisak, in May. So it wouldn't be only one or two months from now. But the whole point in there, that going with the flow of the arsenal, the outflowings of the mind. You want to go in the opposite direction, not expecting, but inspecting. So there's a lot of difference between expecting and inspecting. When you expect something, you're going off into the future. When you're inspecting, you're actually going into the present moment. So try to inspect rather than expect. And if you can do that, you're going against the stream of this arsenal, you're going inwards, and that's when you can start to really feel the energies of these places. So I'm just saying these things to get you to try and inspect, go inside, and see if you can feel the energies of these beautiful places. And when you do, those energies always come up with very, very strong emotions. In Pali we call it piti sukha, of joy and happiness. And they come up there very, very easy, just the power of the place, the power of stillness. It's almost like many places have echoes of noise. These have echoes of stillness. Just a very, very place. It's almost like a sink. So all of your energies, your thoughts, your energies to do things, the thoughts of doing things, the plans and memories, they all tend to just be sucked away by the power of these places. So you do become very still and very peaceful. As long as you're not expecting it, then it happens. So this is where we're going to go tomorrow. And this is actually why we are doing this, to try and enhance our meditation, to try and get some feeling for the power of these places. Understand why these places are indeed holy places, why the Buddha encouraged his disciples to go to these places, actually to feel, to get inspired, and to take Buddhism away from being a theoretical religion, a theoretical path, to something really very meaningful and very, very beautiful. So, I'm not going to speak too long because I want to do a little bit of meditation before we finish, but now is the time for any questions and answers. If there's any questions on the stories of the places where we've been today and yesterday.
Yes, Roger. Question that always comes to my mind was, if the Buddha had never experienced enlightenment, then everybody knows that's what you have to look for.
Very, very good. That's a very great question, because how many of you want to become enlightened? Put your hand up. Okay, cynically, you all want to. And how many of you know what enlightenment is? You can explain it to me. So many of you, just like myself when I was a very young monk, I figured that out. Hey, I want to be enlightened, but what is it? You can be a bit careful, because sometimes it may be just like a marketing ploy about this enlightenment being so great and so blissful. If you find out what it really is, you might not actually be all that pleased with the project, with the product. And actually sometimes when people do find out what it is, something, is this really what I want? People actually get afraid sometimes when they find out what enlightenment is. However, the enlightenment has other meanings, and one of the greatest meanings is like in the ultimate happiness. And so really that is actually what was motivating the Buddha, for the end of suffering, in other words happiness. So he didn't know what enlightenment was. You can't know what enlightenment is until you've at least experienced the spring winner state. But at least for the Buddha, he knew that he was after the end of suffering, the end of old age, sickness and death, the end of grief, pain and despair. So it wasn't, as it were, after enlightenment, but it was after the end of suffering, the state of freedom. And that's actually quite means it's very easy for us. Yeah, we may not know what enlightenment is, but we want to be happy. We want to end suffering. And this is where the Buddha actually understood that enlightenment experience in terms of the Four Noble Truths, in terms of suffering and the end of suffering. We could also talk it about sort of stillness. In other words, stop the outflowings and learn how to make the mind absolutely still by stopping these outflowings of the mind. It's another way of describing enlightenment. So it's interesting, in the text, it's not just the Four Noble Truths which the Buddha was talking about, it's also talking about the end of the outflowings of the mind. In other words, inner stillness. It's a very good question. Who's got another question? Okay, so now we're going to do some meditation for half an hour. So if you'd like to get yourselves comfortable, I'll lead you through the meditation. This is going to be a standard procedure in every evening. The one procedure we haven't done yet is the chanting, because it doesn't seem like appropriate, because we do bow while we're chanting, for the monks have to be up here at this time. So maybe tomorrow we'll try and arrange it so we can do some chanting as well in the evening.
For doing that.
Is that okay? What's coming?
Okay.
One of the important things with meditation is actually to have a lot of contentment. And I think maybe I'll just, while we're trying to get the thing to turn off the air con, for those who want it turned off.
Would you rather it on or off?
I don't care. Because I'm practicing contentment. That's why I mentioned it to start off with. Because without contentment, you never get a peaceful mind. If you allow the mind to go out, there's always something wrong. In fact, there's one teaching of the Buddha where he said, this monk said, it's too cold, I can't meditate. And then it was too hot, I can't meditate. It's too late, I can't meditate. It's too early, I can't meditate. So a monk like that can't meditate at all, never get anywhere. So don't think, oh, we've been busy all day, it's too late to meditate. Or it's too cold to meditate, or it's too hot to meditate. If you think like that, you'll never be able to meditate. Or it's called the fault-finding mind. And I was going to mention this afterwards, but now we've been talking about this, waiting to turn these things off anyway. That on a trip like this, as well as learning how to meditate, we're also going to learn equanimity. Contentment. Because of a trip like this, there's always something going to go wrong. Or things don't quite work out the way we want to. And so please don't find fault and complain, because that's going against the way of enlightenment. That's going with the currents of the mind. It's very easy to find fault and complain. However, here, when trying to go to the contented mind, it doesn't matter what happens, it's good enough. It doesn't matter if you miss going to see one place, this place is good enough. And so today, Book gave me these four mala beads, which I'm going to be carrying around with me. And by the end of this trip, these are going to be super blessed. And we're going to give these away to four people on this. Now this is a prize. At the end of the trip, I'm going to be drawing out from the hat, I think the airline tickets or something, of the people on this trip. And I'll draw out four names, and give these beads to them. But for anybody who complains during this trip, your name will be taken out of the drawer, and you will not be able to get one of these maladies. Not only is this to give poor old Booker an easy life, because she works really hard. It's very hard to deal with Indian people and all this stuff that she has to do to arrange everybody. But also, if she complains about you, I'm going to take her name out of that. So don't complain about anybody, because there's always going to be someone who's late. And if they are, that's fine. Because, you know, one day it starts. We all take turns of being late and being the stubborn one. So if we're late, let everyone sort of give them a bit of space, and just, you need to go back and get something, that's fine. If you leave something, that's fine. If you misunderstand the time, that's fine. Because they don't want to have anyone complaining. We want to learn about meditation, contentment, not fault-finding. If the food isn't quite nice, that's fine. You know, whatever happens, that's fine. So that way you don't complain. And if you like that, not only will you get one of these mala beads, you'll probably get not these four prizes, you'll get the other four prizes which are on offer during this meditation pilgrimage, which is the four prizes of speed winning, once returning, not returning, but arahat. That's also on offer. But only to people who don't complain. Because if you start complaining, your name will be taken out of the hat, and there's no way you get any state of enlightenment like that. Because don't develop the complaining mind, develop the content mind. So that way that you're not complaining at all. Okay, so you can start sitting meditation now. Who cares if they can't turn the air conditioner on? Let's just leave it as it is. It's only bushwalk time anyway. It's much better than having the mosquitoes biting you like last night. So, just sitting down here. Just bring the attention to your body sitting here. Don't complain about your body. Try and be content. But if you do want to move, to adjust your body, please do so. Remember that this is not the path of asceticism. If you don't adjust the body properly, after a while it'll be like a butcher or his apprentice with a sharp knife carving up your knees or your bottom or your back. You feel a lot of pain. Just make the body as comfortable as you possibly can. You've had a good meal, probably from a descendant of Sujata. So you've got all it takes. And you're in one of the closest to the holiest places. Just within so close to where the Lord Buddha became enlightened. So this is a place for letting go, the place for going against the stream of craving, for going in the opposite direction you normally go, not to expect but to inspect, to go inwards. So inspect this moment called now, inspect it, find out what it is by looking within. You will know that the mind will like to go out, wants to go and think about where we're going next or how long is it going to take. That's all expecting, looking out from where you are. See if you can push the mind in the opposite direction. Just understanding what it's like to be now, how it feels, what the sensations of this present moment truly are like. Turning the mind's direction inwards, into the center of time, first of all.
So we're not going anywhere, we're not planning our next trip. We're just stopping and being here. Learning how to arrive rather than always be leaving somewhere. Arriving in the moment, touching down in the here and now. Keep the mind present. If you notice it trying to wander off into the future or the past, gently bring it back. It takes a while to learn how to go against the current of the mind. See if you can go deeper into the present moment by developing a state of inner silence where there's no commentary. So the mind isn't talking to itself. Just hold that inner commentary still. And you go deeper into the moment. Inspect the silence of the mind. Inspect, feel, understand, investigate what it's like not to speak to yourself inside. It's almost as if your mind is stopping. Instead of flowing outwards,
or wasting its energy into thoughts or to plans, staying in the moment. Stopping is the cause of stillness. But don't try and crush the mind with the mind. Allow it to happen naturally by just letting go. Importantly, let go of the fault-finding mind. It doesn't matter what you're experiencing now, accept it as it is. Letting go of all desire and ill will. Inspecting this moment as it is. By shutting down the critical mind for a few moments, by opening it up to peace and stillness. For those of you who want to watch your breath, you can please focus on your breath, but focus on that breath with the same stillness and silence. Not controlling the breath, but inspecting it. Like a nature watcher can observe the animals. The animals are natural. The observation doesn't change what the animals are doing.
stopping everything. Can understand what the Buddha meant by the outflowings of the mind, the current which takes the mind away from the present moment, away from silence, away from your breath, if that's your object. Enlightenment is stopping those outflowings, allowing the mind to become still, so it doesn't move anywhere. I'm going to ask you to watch three more breaths. At the end of the third breath, open your eyes and come out of your meditation. Too long during this session is that tomorrow morning we have to leave early, and some of these days so we have to have an early start because to get to Rajgir from here it's only 83 kilometers. Unfortunately there's not a freeway, no tollway, there's no motorway between here and there. This is only these roads which are usually full of bullock carts and other animals, so it's very hard even to go at 20 kilometres an hour, let alone 30 or 40. So it does take a long time. That's very wonderful because it gives us all the opportunity to see the scenery. So isn't it wonderful it's going to take so long? So because it's going to take so long, we have to leave quite early. And I think the bus will be leaving at 6:30, correct? Because the bus is leaving at 6:30, we have to work back from there. So we have to have breakfast at 5:30. Because by the time people finish their breakfast, then go and wash up and afterwards and get sitting out there, we always have to work to the last person, the slowest person. That usually takes at least an hour.
wherever it is. So see who is the slowest person. If you're always the slowest person, so try to get your act together and be a bit faster for the sake of others. And so we have our breakfast at 5:30. Yes. The toilet stops on the bus. Again, that when we need a toilet stop, maybe every hour or
as
request.
Now,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So just whenever somebody really needs to. So
if they want to stop there,
just come up and tell the driver. Oh, okay, yeah. So even in bus number 2, they just go and tell the driver and they'll call, book, and then the two will stop together. So have a little bit of endurance. So just because you feel you'd like to go now, because if you'd like to go, you'll stop the whole 2 buses. We all have to go. Even the marks out of sympathy for you. So try and sort of have some endurance. It's usually that, especially sometimes, people do get stomach aches. So be careful of what you eat as well while you're here. So it's not food which is, you know, you're used to. So this is not the time to try and experiment with new cuisines. So just go try and know what you're used to, and that way that we don't have to stop too often. But there would be plenty of stops for you. But remember, it's stopping at the side of the road, so it's not in actually bathrooms. Ladies are there, men to the right, or the other way around, not quite sure. And we go in the fields. Yeah, so bring your own toilet paper. That's all right. It's part in your hand luggage, so you're not going to actually go and open up all those bags in the back to get your toilet paper out. So put it in your bags. And see what happens. We did it before, it's all part of the fun. And sometimes it's nice to have a stop on the journey. And have a little bit of a walk around while other people are doing their business and then get in the bus again. No photographs. Anyone who gets their video camera out, I'll report them to the police when we get back to Australia. They'll be looking perverts. Okay. I don't think we won't be meditating there, but we'd just be sitting down for a short while. Remember the last time? It was a bit of a hot. We did it in the afternoon last time. So we carried some water and we sat down afterwards and had a nice drink and a rest. And had a little talk there before we actually went back again. So it's a cave, so it'd be like rocks there to sit on, but it won't be that soft. If you really find it hard to sit down for half an hour and take it something to put under your bottom.
Tomorrow I have to
take
some bathroom
there, okay. So the bathroom will be in 7 o'clock. Yeah. Okay. So they'll be opposite one another.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. So there's no problem there at all. We'll be in 2 hotels, but they'll be opposite each other. Yeah. So we're just opposite each other. So we'll be able to wave to each other across the road. And we can find out who gets the best hotel and who gets the worst hotel. We'll be eating together as well?
No.
Separate. So we'll find out who has the best food and who has the worst. Okay, so we'll meet together in the evening. Okay. Okay, I think that's all the questions there. So what time do you have the breakfast in the morning?
6:30.
Now, if you carry on like that, you only get one chance, and your name gets taken out of the hat. You won't get to leave. 5:30 breakfast. 6:30 we leave. Okay. Anyone okay, clear with that? We will from now on start putting those numbers on a piece of paper, leaving them at the reception. So if you have any doubts at all, even on there, so you can actually read it on the piece of paper, so everybody would know what the times are on the piece of paper. Or you can come and ask one of the monks, and they should know, I hope. What time are you having breakfast tomorrow morning, monks? 5:30. Okay, now because we're getting up early, those of you who want to go and have a rest, it's 9:10. So you can go and have a nice rest, so you can get up bright and sparky at 4:30. So, good night, have a nice night, and see you in the morning. Anyone doesn't get on the bus at 6:30, we leave you here. Yes. Those people who are staying here, because we've organised this before. You can actually stay here for a few moments and I'll just talk to you.
Testing, testing. Birds at Bodh Gaya. Yes.